Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jet Football Podcast, with your host Chris and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter at Liftoff Jets. You can follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. You can follow myself at CP7NY. You could also find our podcast wherever you find your podcast, at Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, iHeartRadio. And you could also find us at SportsWire Radio at sportsandarian.com/player. And you can follow the station manager there, Thomas Price, at Thomas Price 2017, for all the scheduling, for all the other great shows on there. So, Sharman, feeling good, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the most excitement, you know, that we felt in a long, long time as Jets fans. I mean, we keep saying that every week. It's so true.
Yeah.
And if anyone doubts what we feel as Jets fans, I think you need to ask non-Jets fans about the Jets, because you could tell that people are, like, you know, kind of taken aback by the energy. And when they start digging in what they're seeing or what they're feeling, because it's let's get it, let's be real. It's easy to hate the Jets. I mean, or just don't be mindful of them, because for so long they've been inactive in the playoffs, inactive in any championship games. So why do you care? And the fact that they've had so many really bad situations on live television, all this stuff, I think it's easy for people to point that out. So if you're not paying attention and you're just kind of gleaning through things, you catch the Aaron Rodgers hype and then that's it. But if you're interested enough, or you got pulled in by the Aaron Rodgers hype, and then you start noticing that, oh yeah, they could actually play really good defense, like top five in the NFL. Oh yeah, that offensive, the offensive weapons are nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Oh yeah, Aaron Rodgers is actual Aaron Rodgers, and yeah, he probably had a bad year last year, but he could still skin you alive if he needs to. And if when you start seeing those things, start talking about that, and then I think that's the best, probably the best thing about all the shows, Hard Knocks and On Jets Drive, is that you get to see, if you had questions about Robert Saleh, you could kind of see, you know, the kind of coach he actually is, and see that he's a leader of men. And he's kind of got his finger on the pulse of the team. So so everything is just pointing upwards, man. And we're all reveling in it. We're enjoying it. And I think if you're a real Jets fan, you know that this, as much as we are enjoying this, that, you know, we haven't won anything yet.
Right.
And until we do, the energy that we're basically basking in right now is just that. You know, it's just energy. We're just taking it for what it is now. But with the time when it becomes real is if this, one of the things I think that sticks out to me, not to go too far, but I think every time I watch either catch glimpses of ESPN or FS1, they're talking about the first 7 games of the season, right? Mm-hmm. When people will really take hold of this energy that are not Jets fans, is if the Jets come out 4-something or 5-something in the end those 7 games.
Yep.
Is when people are going to be like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
They just got through the tough part of their schedule.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, maybe they're for real.
That's when it's actually going to grab everybody else. And I think it's going to be something of a tidal wave, because it's the Jets are actually, I think it was Josina Anderson on Twitter that said, is Aaron Rodgers likable? I don't think it's about Aaron Rodgers, actually. I know everybody wants it to be, But I think it's about the team. And the thing is, are the Jets likable? And I'll tell you one thing, as a Jets fan, they're damn likable, like incredibly likable, because the storylines are never ending. And that's one of the reasons why the NFL wanted the Jets on Hard Knocks.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And you know what? I really don't care if anybody else outside of Jet fans like us or not, right? Because
true,
right? That to me doesn't bother me. I'd rather be, you know, just like what Salah said, right? Last week. If we're not what did he say? If we're not popping, then if they're not hating us, we're not popping or something like that.
Yeah, if we don't have haters, you ain't popping. Basically, yeah. it's kind of like I think it's from a rap song.
Yes. Yeah, they played it in one of the shows. So I was
like, right, it's true. Right.
And that's, so that's a good thing. If they're coming after us, that's good. Keep coming, and hopefully that feeds the team, you know. And I think what I got from One Jets Drive and Hard Knocks, outside of the Aaron Rodgers, you know, love affair and everything else. Yeah, they made everything look great, and he says all the great things, and he's very likable and all that. Fine. We knew that was going to happen, right? We knew it was going to be that kind of thing. But outside of that, outside of the Aaron Rodgers love affair, what I got was that the Jets, the players, the coaches are embracing all of this. They're embracing that pressure. They're embracing the hatred or whatever, the comments. They're embracing this team, you know, the good and the bad. The bad stuff, like, oh, the same old Jets. We've heard that a million times. And they're also embracing what we're feeling, like, you know what? This is a good team. This is a playoff team, you know, and this is a team that could do some damage in the playoffs and possibly get to the Super Bowl if everything, you know, like every other team, if everything goes right, if everybody's healthy or somewhat healthy by the end of the year, yeah, you know, good things can happen. And that's what I'm getting from the team and from the coaches. They're not going in as these underdog or humble team. You know, they're going in as the young, hungry, ready to burst on the scene team. Like, we're ready. We're ready for this. And I like that. You know? What do you think?
I agree with what you're saying, man. But that's what Salah wants them from them. I think he said it multiple times. I think especially in his incredible opening speech in on Hard Knocks, he one of his points was embrace it.
Yep.
Embrace everything that is the 2023 New York Jets and all the expectations. And that means, you know, that means if you're going to embrace that, that means, guess what? You got to be that guy. If you're going to embrace it, then you got to be that him. You got to be the guy, you know? So that means every day you got to be better. You got to be your best self every time. And teams are going to come expecting to get the best, and they're going to give you their best. So that's what it takes. That's what it means to be respected. And as Jets fans, we know that more than anything, we've experienced it for so long. The disrespect, you know, by a lot of teams where they just kind of half-assing it, you know, not really in it, you know, and still beating us, you know, and then probably halfway through the game, they're like all sitting on the sidelines, like, yeah, you know, just a Jets, you know. Right. So to be on the other side of that, where teams are salivating, they're like, man, we get to play the Jets, you know. Okay. I think Salah wants is the players to embrace that energy and take that to new heights. So yeah, so man, listen, it's hard for you not to think that. You just one name, I think, what's the word I'm looking for? His Sauce Gardner, to me, describes a lot of what is the Jets. Incredibly passionate, incredibly competitive, incredibly talented, a freak, actually talent, freakishly talented, actually. But with all that, deep, smart, thoughtful, kind, wants to be more than just a cornerback, wants to be a Hall of Fame level cornerback, you know. And it's not even just a wish or a prayer to him. He feels like he belongs in that conversation. He thinks that every time he steps on the field, that he is who he is. And every second and every play and every snap is his chance to prove to everyone or prove to himself that that's who he is. And because of that, that's just not an act, because you see things like, oh yeah, well, you know what? I'm the new star cornerback in the NFL. I'm not going to lay around. I'm going to go graduate from college. Setting an example for his peers, where Quinnen Williams said, hey man, listen, I have a few, I actually could graduate now, but I'm like sleeping on it. I should actually take the offseason and go graduate myself. That is leadership. You know, sometimes you don't have to say, you just have to do it by actions. People follow you. And he does it by actions because he actually studies football, have very high IQ, match the skill set and the freakish athleticism. There was the pick of Aaron Rodgers in practice, where he peeled off his guy because he noticed and understand the combination of, or the route combinations, and noted and knew where the ball was going, where Aaron Rodgers was going to go with the ball, and peeled off his guy to intercept Aaron Rodgers. That, if people don't understand, is an elite level cornerback play. Because being able to not only understand what your job is, but also understand what the entire defense is doing at that time, which gives you the third eye to understand what the offense is trying to do to attack that scheme, is another level. And this is what he wants to be. He wants to be that guy where you're not only scared of him being one-on-one on your wide receiver, you're also scared of him understanding and noticing what you're trying to do, and him basically baiting you into throwing the ball somewhere, and him using his freakish athleticism to peel off his guy and take the ball from you. That is incredible. So in my opinion, he encapsulates, that's the word I was looking for, everything that this team is, because there, a lot of him is still a question mark, right? Because he only has 1 year of being great as a pro cornerback. But still, you can't help but feel the depth of his talent and the depth of his, you know, you just think he's special, you know. And I think in a lot of ways, that's what you feel about this team. But there is just this couple question marks here and there. You know, like, he's still young. Same thing with the Jets. You know, he doesn't have that much experience. Same thing with the Jets. You know what I mean? You know, so yeah, I think it really, really matches up there when you pay attention to him and the team.
And going back to the, you know, that speech that Salah said in the beginning of Hard Knocks, I think, you know, about the crow pecking at the eagle, and
yes,
the eagle spreads its wings and soars as high as possible until the crow suffocates and then falls back down to earth and dies, all that. But I thought the best part of that speech was the very end, like that last basic chapter. Basically, he says, embrace what we're capable of. Embrace the fact that we aren't the same old Jets. Embrace the fact that we do have a target on our back. Embrace the fact that when teams look at our schedule, they're not chalking us up for a W. They're coming at you. That's where we want to be, and that's effing awesome.
Yeah. I mean, hey, what you said is great, I think. But if you put that whole speech together, that is incredibly perfect timing and texture. For him to pick that, to say that at that moment, in the beginning of training camp, bro, come on, man. I know we're still waiting for the results of him being a good, better coach, because everybody still thinks he's like one of the worst coaches in the NFL. But if you don't think that was palpable, man, oh my God, that is motivation 101, man. This man, I wanted to get up and run a couple laps around my block.
Even before last night's episode, like, I seen it not just in practice, but in the one Jet Drive show, like, you could see how they're talking and how they're, you know, they are embracing all of that. You could tell that they are embracing that, hey, you know what, we are good. You know, like I said earlier, it's like they're feeling that. It's not like they're going into this season like, man, I hope we do good. We might have a chance to win with Aaron Rodgers. No. We are that good. You know, we're not the same old Jets. We're not this team, you know, just trying to get by or just, you know, trying to squeak in somewhere. And, you know, like last season, we went into the season like, oh, you know, if we get through that first half of the season with a couple of wins, maybe, you know, the back end of the schedule is not that hard. Maybe we could win 9-10 games if everything goes right. And, you know, if Zach, you know, a lot of ifs, right? Zach Wilson can perform, can he develop and all that stuff. Like, we don't have those questions anymore. You know, it's so good to see Aaron Rodgers in camp. Like, it's like having another coach there, you know, like just kind of helping out Zach Wilson, helping out the offense, helping out the defense for that matter. You know, it's so good to go into this offseason not having the, oh man, I hope Zach Wilson develops this year. I hope he becomes, you know, like all this ifs, you know, like, but now we got that steady presence of Aaron Rodgers in camp. You know, this guy, we know what he could do, what he's capable of, what he's going to do. Like, we have this and we have the weapons around him. And I, real quick, I was thinking of something today and it kind of hit me, like what Aaron Rodgers is. You remember the movie The Rock, right? With Sean Connery.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage, right? They got Sean Connery out of jail so that they, so that he could break the FBI or whatever team into Alcatraz and all that. It's almost like the Jet story. Like, we got Aaron Rodgers, not out of jail, but out of Green Bay, and he's going to help us break into the Super Bowl. Like, he's got all the secrets. He's got all the answers. Like, he knows. He's been there. He knows how to win. We don't have anybody. We haven't had a quarterback like that. Yeah, we had Flacco, but let's be honest. That's not a great example. But Aaron Rodgers knows how to win. You know what I mean? And he's got the keys. He's got the answers. He could say, listen, guys, this is how it's done. I've done it this way. I've won this way. Just don't worry. And he's doing it in a calm way, too, which is amazing. Like, right now, it's calm. I'm sure in the games, it's like, but you could tell, like, it's such a calming influence, but it's also a confidence in camp now through everybody, not just with Rodgers, but with everybody, with what Salah said. Like, yeah, we embrace all this because we are that good. We're not the same.
I think to round this all off, there was an incident in Hard Knocks where the defensive coordinator was showing a throw that Aaron Rodgers made to the kid, the tight end, the kid from Long Island, and he said, we played this so well, but look at where this guy put that ball. Like, who else on the planet could do this? And he's ours. So two things occurred to me when they said that. The confidence he gives them, right?
Right.
With what he could do. That's number one. But also the confidence he instills in them when they know that only an Aaron Rodgers throw could beat our the way we played this. So we got to get to this level. He basically gives them a kind of a ceiling, not a ceiling, like a guide to where they should be, the level they should be playing. Because when you're playing against a player of that caliber, if you could keep up with him, or sometimes even surpass him as the defense, you know you're operating on a pretty high level. And you know, being able to understand and finagle that spot or that feeling of playing that level or elite defense is going to help that defense early and often, in my opinion.
Yep. No doubt. And I think, like you said, those first few games, yeah, we're going to have to, and it's a challenge for the team to come out on fire. Like, we have to come out hot. We can't come out cold, because we're going to get slapped with a huge punch of reality if we come out cold. So I think he said that too. Aaron Rodgers, I think, said it in, I think it was the One Jet Drive episode, where he says, yeah, we got a challenge. We have to come together as a team quickly. You know, a lot of new, obviously he's a new face along with a lot of the other guys. New offense has to be, you know, instituted and all that. So he goes, yeah, we're going to have to come together quickly as a team, because, you know, right out of the chute, we got a tough schedule. So, and I think that's going to be a big challenge for them. They got to come out, you know, roaring on all eight cylinders. It can't be, you know, they can't come out slow. And that's a big worry too, because I think last year we were concerned with Aaron Rodgers coming out cold, you know, a little slow, because he had a lot of new receivers last year, right, with Green Bay, and they kind of staggered a little bit in the beginning, but then they picked it up a little bit. So I don't know. We can't afford that. We can't afford to come out slow. So I think it's going to be a totally different start for us. I think he knows the importance, and he knows the time is, you know, he doesn't have time on his side anymore, you know. And I think Garrett Wilson said that too, when he was being interviewed on, I think it was Hard Knocks. And he says, yeah, he goes, this is great. He goes, I don't know how long we got with him, but he goes, we got to take advantage of it. You know, I don't know how long we got with Aaron Rodgers, you know, it might be 2 or 3 years, you know, it might be one, it might be, who knows, 4 years. We really have no idea, you know? So they got to take advantage. And if it's just this year, if it's just next, you know, this year and next year, let's take, you know, got to take advantage. So it's going to be interesting how they come out at the beginning of the season.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting in a lot of ways. I think the insertion, when bringing Lazard and Cobb over is going to help with things. I think how good Garrett Wilson is going to help with things. Jeremy Ruckert, who I was talking about earlier, I think I like the way he's been in camp. I like his trajectory. Of course, we have the other guys. We have the other guys around. That's, you know, we have Uzama and Conklin. That's there also. So there's weapons galore, man, in a lot of ways. And today, hearing Aaron Rodgers also talk about how the middle of the offensive line has been stellar the whole time. It's the edges, it's the tackles that has been the problem, which we always knew about, right?
Yep.
it's the problem, you know. But I think ultimately this is what is in my head. With the return of Duane Brown off the pup, whenever that happens, to me, solidifies the line, because then you put Becton back at right tackle, take those backup tackles off the field, and, you know, and that completes, in my opinion, completes the line, because Brown is a way better player than any of those guys. Better than Max Mitchell, better than Billy Turner, who's the two guys that was there. I know they cut Yannick Kajus because he was injured, but he wasn't doing too much. I think he was more of a camp body at this point anyway. Billy Turner is a backup at this point. Turnstile Billy, that in the Jets Twitter has called him, just hasn't performed well. Max Mitchell has been a better run blocker than he's been a pass blocker. I think at some point we gotta also give it to our defensive line. These guys you're blocking from the first team to the second team to the third team, and you're not getting a break. Because the level of talent is just almost so consistent, it's incredible. You're just getting blown off by speed and power. I think Mitchell has struggled, but he also struggled against Brian Burns this week. Today, we know Brian Burns is one of the better pass rushers in the NFL, so that goes without saying.
Yeah,
but in my opinion, with kicking Mekhi Becton over to the right and bringing Dwayne Brown off the pup, I think that solidifies the line at the end of the day. And in my opinion, the level of snaps that guys like Warren and Mitchell and Turner has gotten will basically help them when they need to stand in for a few games here and there during the season, because there's going to be injuries. And it's just what it is. That's how the NFL is. The difference between a 7-game injury or just a couple game injury is what we're looking for. We're looking for more like Knicks, more little couple game or a game or half a game or something like that.
Yeah.
We're not, and that would be involved luck. And I think that's the part of this that we need to speak about. Because I don't care how good your team is in the NFL, you need a little bit of luck on your side to go all the way. That's just how it is. And I think that at the end of the day, the Jets will need that luck to kind of, finish everything off. But I think, my opinion, that solidifies the line when Brown comes back.
I think he's the key. If he comes back healthy, and it sounded like, I think they asked him today, and they said it should be very soon that he returns. So hopefully we'll see Dwayne Brown soon enough at left tackle. And like you said, that would solidify it. Becton, I mean, I still have questioning. I'm still going to question the knee. How long is it going to hold up and all that? Until we see it in a full game, because in the Hall of Fame game, he played, I think, 7 snaps. He looked good.
Yeah, he looked really good.
But it was only 7 snaps. So.
And today in practice, he looked really good too, from what I heard.
So he's got to build
and
it up.
He was just blowing dudes off. Like, just take this. There was one play I think everybody basically exhaled off of, where a linebacker was trying to blitz or come off or something like that, and he basically kind of ate him up. That reminded everyone of the young Becton coming in, where everybody was like, oh my God, he's going to be the next whatever. So I think the way the Jets are playing this is perfectly. I think some Jets fans are too quick to give up on things.
Too early.
Too early, yeah, man. Really too early. I think there's been two narratives about the offensive line that's been completely wrong. Number one, I think people need to give Becton space. He's coming off a knee injury, for heaven's sake. He's a big dude with a knee injury. You know what that means?
Yeah.
Holy crap. You cannot rush him back. Gotta be careful. Gotta be patient. And the fact that they're slowly upping his snaps and upping his, energy in games and what they're asking him to do is, to me, a testament to them taking it slow and letting him build back his stamina and build back his strength is, in my opinion, perfect. And the second narrative that one just threw me for a loop, in my opinion. Everybody all of a sudden started talking about Tippmann like he, Joe Tippmann, like he was some kind of bust. What? When did that happen?
Right, exactly. After 1 week, he's a bust?
Come on, man. And if you study the tape on the game, the Hall of Fame game, he had a hell of a game. I think the one play where he had a reach block, where basically he was playing off the, what would you say? He was playing on the inside of the defensive lineman. And the defensive, he was playing on the inside of him, meaning his right shoulder was lined up with the defensive line's left shoulder. Not left shoulder, right shoulder. So it's right shoulder to right shoulder. And he, a reach block means that he has to get his whole body all the way to the left of the defensive lineman. That's what a reach block is. And normally it means a lot of hip flexibility and quick feet. And he did that so perfectly. It was incredible to see with the way the ball snapped and his just basically getting to the left-hand side of the defensive lineman and walling him off, giving I think it was Abanaconda a kind of a lane to run into for about 6 yards. That is the athleticism of Joe Tippmann, and his technique, is especially in zone blocking, is incredible because he did a lot of that in college. That's his game. But he also showed a lot of anchor and a good amount of good anchor and a really good power. So you have, in my opinion, the potential for this kid to be incredibly special. So I'm not going to give up on him. I don't think anybody should. And I don't think it's too early in his career to comment, in my opinion, about what he's going to be.
What about going back to the game, with the offense with Zach Wilson? What were your thoughts on watching Zach? Because I thought he looked a lot more confident. He wasn't as didn't look as nervous or uncomfortable in the pocket. What was your thoughts about him?
I think you saw the thing that we always kind of saw until it kind of didn't happen. He is if you get him comfortable, he could do things. There's a reason why he was drafted that high. So you kind of got to pay a little bit into Zach and see the Zach that we thought for a little bit. When he has everything under control, when he has his mechanics under control, when he's confident, and when his head is in the game. So I saw that. I think his confidence will keep growing, but I don't think it's done yet. I think he's going to have days where he's going to kind of step back a little bit. He's going to still kind of go back, fall back a little bit into the 2022 Zach Wilson, rushing things, not seeing things properly. But that's, to me, that's understandable. That's part of his growth, is to be able to be comfortable in the new Zach and stop going back to the old Zach. But that's a hard thing to do, because that's a transformation that needs work daily. And I'm upbeat about it, about what he can be. But I think it's way too early in the game to say what he's going to be or where he's going to be. I think he just has the kind of atmosphere that he's in right now. I think it's perfect for a guy in his position right now, to be able to, number one, be humble at the feet of a quarterback of Aaron Rodgers' caliber, but also get to understand the inner workings of an offense that was created for a player like him. Because don't get it twisted, I know who Aaron Rodgers is and what he is. Zach Wilson is a sliver of what Aaron Rodgers is, kind of cut from the same cloth with the athleticism and the throwing, talent. and stuff like that. So I'm not in no way saying that Zach Wilson is Aaron Rodgers, but what I'm saying is because Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback that Zach Wilson always looked up to, there's a lot about Zach Wilson's game that mirrors what Aaron Rodgers is. And it's beautiful for him to learn from the, you know, basically the foundation he's built himself into. Most likely a lot of it is Aaron Rodgers. So being able to learn from the guy that his foundation was built on, I think will help him go forward.
And you know what? I think we mentioned it. I don't know if it was last week or one of our previous episodes, that basically this was a good thing for Zach Wilson to be the backup, to kind of like just kind of reset his career. You know, it's almost like the first 2 years kind of like didn't happen now. You know, he could start over. He could basically start from the ground level and, you know, and just work his way back into it. And, you know, working behind a guy like Aaron Rodgers has got to be pretty amazing to be learning from that guy, because the first 2 years, you know, he was just thrown into the mix. He was just like, here you go start, you know. And obviously the first year, unfortunately, Greg Knapp passed away, you know, in tragic accident. And that just piled on to the pressure that he had on him, you know, with his quarterback coach dying. And then coming into the season, I think just getting thrown into the mix with Gase, with that offense, and it was just a mess. So I think now it's almost like he's a rookie again. And that's a good thing, right? It's almost like erase those first 2 years, start over, and here's your teacher now. You know, this great quarterback who's bringing in this really good offensive coordinator who's been around a few years and has developed quarterbacks on his own as well. So I think that's a good thing. What about the wide receivers that we've seen? Jason Brownlee, Xavier Gibson. What do you think of some of these guys? Any chance
they? I think they're promising. Brownlee is an intriguing player for me, but I think it's easy in camp to make plays. That doesn't mean anything to me. I think being more consistent is the name of the game. And I think he was a little bit inconsistent in winning his one-on-ones in the game. He's kind of took a step back in my mind. Xavier Gibson, on the other hand, is a little bit more what he is now. Is his ceiling as high as Brownlee's? I don't know. I don't think so. But he's a pretty promising wide receiver. Let's see how far he goes. I don't know if, because it's pretty tough, man. It's tough to kind of measure those guys because I don't know what they're asking them to do. I don't know what the route combinations or what they're, you know, the reasons why they ask him to do what. So the insides of that, I can't tell you. But, you know, on the surface, I like what Brownlee gives you, and I like what Gibson gives you. I just think Gibson has been a little bit more consistent, and Brownlee has just had the higher ceiling, you know. Yeah. I think that's the difference. Yeah.
So he's probably got the best shot of sticking on the roster and not the practice squad. You know, if they go to, what, six receivers? I think he would be the wide receiver six at this point.
With Wilson, Davis, Lazard, Hardman, Cobb. That's five. So either Gibson or Brownlee would have to do the six.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle. Because like you said, one of them is, you know, Gibson is that, you know, shorter receiver, maybe a little more speed. Brownlee, yes, much bigger, 6'2". I think Gibson's 5'9", 5'8", you know, around there.
Yeah, about that, yes.
And Brownlee's 6'2", big, tall receiver.
And he's fast, too, though. You can't sleep on that. He's fast, too.
Yeah. So we'll see. So what'd you think? I know the other position I wanted to ask you about was the linebackers, right? Because that's, you know, our big question mark coming in outside of CJ. And we obviously learned watching Hard Knocks that Mr. Chaz Surratt is Coach Salah's favorites right now. So, what'd you think of these guys?
It's crazy when you think about it. I think I said this in passing a few episodes ago, talking about Surratt, because I remember him in college where he was the speedy linebacker. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. That's his potential. But he used to be a quarterback, so he's looking at linebacker from a totally different spot.
Learning, right?
Yeah, and he's learning, and I think part of the reason why, again, like I said, the last episode, the reason why Nasruddin got cut was because of the rise of guys like Chaz Surratt. I think there's a couple other names. I think ultimately Sherwood is probably going to be the guy there, but I think it would be kind of too early now to say, not too early, but I think guys like Barnes and Surratt are guys that, in my opinion, stick out a lot. One of the reasons why I think, just basically common sense, is Chaz Surratt at his size and speed is the perfect linebacker. You know, he's bigger, or he weighs more than Quincy Williams and CJ Mosley. And he's faster than both of them. He's bigger than Jamien Sherwood. Jamien Sherwood is like 220, if that.
Right.
Probably about smaller than that, but not too much, with the same height. Chaz Surratt is 233. So he's basically CJ Mosley's size, but he's faster.
Mm.
So he basically has Quincy Williams' size. Quincy Williams' speed with the size of CJ Mosley. If you could take that and ball that up and install the defense in him, make him have him understand how to play linebacker in this system, you have a hell of a linebacker. But that's a long ways away, in my opinion, because this is probably one of the harder schemes to learn as a linebacker. So, but the fact that the coaches love him means that he is putting in the work and he's impressing them every practice. And that's the good news. Because I think I saw a lot about Barnes that I like. I also saw things that were missing in a little bit. I think Sherwood, to me, he looks a little bigger. I don't know. I can't tell you if he did put on more weight, but he does seem to know where he need to be. He didn't seem like he was he spent a lot of time out of position, which is awesome. That, to me, that's growth. So I like the potential of the guys behind Mosley and Williams. But they need to grow up quickly because, we would definitely need guys like Sherwood and Surratt.
Yeah, I definitely feel a little bit better about the linebacker position. I know it's early, but I feel a little bit better now seeing these guys. You know, at first I was like, man, linebacker could be a problem, especially if CJ gets hurt in any way or something. If he misses any games, we're definitely done. But yeah, you got to feel a lot better, man. And for Salah to speak about him, you know, on the show like that, that's got to be a good sign. And if you remember, before camp even started, CJ was mentioning Sherwood, you know, even before that, to say, yeah, he's been putting in the work and all this kind of stuff. So, I feel a little better about the linebacker position. So, listen, we've said it many times. Our biggest hurdle this year is going to be injuries. If we could keep that down to, you know, a low level, we'll be good. You know, if we get injuries like last year, no team is going to get through that. So just got to stay healthy. You know, that's what it's all about. So, and outside of the game, the Hall of Fame game, I know this weekend we're going to be playing the Carolina Panthers in our next preseason game, I think on Saturday, 4:00. Before we go, we definitely have to talk about a little bit about the Hall of Fame, the induction ceremony itself. A couple of our guys went in, Joe Klecko, and of course Darrell Revis, among eight players that went in. Rondé Barber, Chuck Howley, Ken Riley, Joe Thomas, Zach Thomas, and DeMarcus Ware, who also sang the national anthem for the game, which was cool. And the coach, Don Coryell, long overdue, another one.
Yes.
Amazing how some of these guys, I'm like Chuck Howley, those names are like, they're, you know, I thought they were Hall of Famers already. And Ken Riley, I think he's like second or third, he's top three or four in picks, all-time interceptions. He's got 65.
And they, crazy.
It's sad. The reason why I think it's sad is because, you know, the guy passed away. You know, so really appreciate it. Just like Don Coryell. He passed away well. You know, these guys, they couldn't appreciate, you know, going up on stage and putting on that jacket, you know, and going to the museum and seeing that bust among all the other great players and coaches of the NFL. You know, it's, I don't know. I felt bad. I felt bad for Ken Riley's son, who did a great job with the speech, and Don Coryell's daughter. She did a great speech as well. You kind of feel bad for them because this is long overdue that these guys are going in, you know, and said.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, man. I believe in giving everybody their flowers before, you know, posthumous, well, how do you say it? I think that's the word. I think that's the word. I'm not going to try to say that. I butchered it enough already. But to me, honoring somebody after they die is, I think, although it's an honorable thing, I think it kind of shows how short-sighted we are as human beings, man. I don't think the man needed to die. Coryell needed to die for you to understand how important he was to the game of football. I mean, almost every NFL book I've ever read mentions his name. There's a reason why that is. You know, you don't become that big in the game that your name is mentioned almost every NFL book that you're not, you know, that you're not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on, you know. So, yeah, that was an awesome thing. It's always awesome to see those, you know, and kind of just to feel how heavy they've contributed so much to the game that they love that it's almost like you could feel it at that moment. You know, you could feel how heavy that weight was that they carried around, and what it means. So it's always awesome, man. And congratulations to all those guys. These guys are, you know, guys like Joe Thomas, you just know that this guy is a legendary player. You know, Zach Thomas, come on, man. You know, after all these years of playing linebacker, you know, I still remember him being a fear, that you feared playing him.
Oh yeah,
you know, you did not go into a game playing against the Dolphins and go, oh yeah, that guy is there. No, you knew that it was gonna be a long day playing that guy.
Did Peyton mention him in his speech or talking about Zach Thomas? Didn't Peyton?
What's that?
I think Peyton Manning mentioned that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think I saw somebody mention that online too.
Yep. Yeah. So it's pretty, I mean, and Joe Thomas, I mean, that guy, think about all the years he went through Cleveland. I mean,
yeah.
That's,
yep,
alone is Hall of Fame, you know, and he was a great guard. He was great tackle, excuse me, at what he did. Yeah. But he went tough years, man, in Cleveland. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
Yeah. Joe Klecko, thank God he went in. You know, it took him forever. Yes. You're talking over 30 years.
It was pretty emotional, in my opinion. Yeah, too. Yeah.
No doubt. Chuck Howley, he's been around forever. Long overdue. The one that, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, because he does deserve it, Rondé Barber. He was just steady, I think. And I think a lot of people don't realize, like, how hard it is to be that good.
Steady.
Right.
As a corner.
Right. Because usually guys, once they lose a step, they go play DB or something, or maybe they go inside more or something, whatever. But this guy, he was just steady his whole career. And you know what? Good for him. I mean, I don't know.
I think that's what they're honoring. I think that's one of the things that about him is a lot of his game was not that flashy, but he was, like you said, consistent. You know, that's what he was. Is like, to me, it was king consistent consistency. A lot of the corners that we know are Hall of Fame corners, they were flashy, intercept you, you know, dance. You know, even if he did his little dance once in a while, you know, I think his game spoke for itself, man. It spoke loud enough that, in my opinion, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, no doubt, no doubt. And he wasn't a first ballot either. It's not like,
no, exactly. You
know, it's just that he went in the same year as Revis, so everybody, you know, all of a sudden we're going to start comparing guys. You know,
you can't do that.
No, you can't. Come on, you know, you're talking about one of the greatest to ever play the game. And I remember, I think Deion Sanders said it right. He goes, there's different levels in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So look at it that way. There's different levels. Yeah, you're in, but yeah, are you
Deion Sanders? No, you know.
Sanders and, you know, Revis are up there, you know, maybe Rob up there as well, but
yep.
There's the next level.
Yep, so, exactly.
Then we look ahead quickly. I just want to say there's a couple of guys I think are going to go in first ballot. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but Julius Peppers.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, man.
And Antonio Gates.
Yep, definitely. I agree with that.
I think those guys are going in next year. There's a couple of good players on the ballot next year, but, I mean, those guys have to go in. After that, then it's you know, then who knows? I mean, there's a lot of guys that were left off this past year, you know, when you look at it. And, you know, yeah, the guys that got in, but, you know, you're talking about like Willie Anderson, Jared Allen, Devin Hester, Dwight Freeney, Torrey Holt, Andre Johnson, you know, Albert Lewis, Reggie Wayne, Patrick Willis, Darren Woodson. Those guys are not in yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. That's crazy. Some of those names, yeah, man, it's crazy. Those are the meat of the years of football that I watched.
Yeah. All pros every year. You know, mm-hmm. those guys that were on the final, then there was guys that made the semifinal. You're talking about Eric Allen, Anquan Boldin, Henry Ellard, Jarrere Evans, London Fletcher, James Harrison, Rodney Harris, Robert Mathis. Crazy. The Rodney Harris, wasn't that funny? Oh my God, it was a little embarrassing, but it was funny.
Oh, when he was talking to Sauce.
Plus, yeah, and Sauce was like, he didn't even know
who that is. Yeah, he's a kid. How would he know?
I forget, man. He's so young.
You forget that he's like 23 years old or 22, whatever the hell he is.
Like, he doesn't know.
Yeah, he does not know. He's not old enough to remember this guy. You know, right. me, we remember him.
Yeah,
you know, so
right. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but Rodney Harrison's last year was 2008.
That's crazy.
But it's 15 years ago. So
that's 15 years ago, bro.
So he's 23. So he was 8 years old in his last year. Sheesh. He probably didn't play football when he was 8.
Yeah.
We had to see him terrorize us every freaking year.
Yeah, that is true.
I know. But So that's about it, guys. We're going to be watching this Saturday, the Jets, Carolina Panthers preseason game number 2 for us, number 1 for them. Get to see, I think, their rookie starting quarterback, so that should be interesting. And we'll be back next week. We'll be talking about the game, hopefully all good stuff. And we'll see you guys next week.
Take it easy, guys.